Hi, you've reached the John Curley Show listener introduction line. Please tell us a little bit about yourself and why you enjoy the show. Thank you.
Hopefully it's complimentary.
The key to industry transformation, the key to success is developers, 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 developers.
There you go. That was the key. By the way, that went on for about 4 minutes.
And I love that you just poured water on
under the armpit. You never seen the video?
Oh, no, I've seen
it. It's classic. It's an easy brunt of every joke was, well, Cleveland, at least we're not Cleveland. This was, when did this come out, Joe? The hastily made Cleveland tourism video.
I think like 2008.
Yeah. It's hilarious, but it's not fair to Cleveland.
Fun times in Cleveland today. Cleveland, come on down to Cleveland Town, everyone. Come and look at both of our buildings under construction since 1868. See our river that catches on fire. It's so polluted that all our fish have AIDS. We see the sun almost three times a year. Don't slow down in East Cleveland or you'll die. Our economy's based on LeBron James. Buy a house for the price of a VCR. Our main export is crippling depression. It could be worse, though. At least we're not Detroit.
Now that is
we're not Detroit.
Detroit. I forgot that yet. Cleveland's response to that and all the mockery.
The new center of the world is Cleveland, one of America's hottest housing markets.
The number one metro area.
Great place to start a family.
A low cost of living and rich cultural
feed.
So, yeah, this is Metropolis, the birthplace of Superman.
More than 2 million
WNBA
fans.
WNBA is
state
coming
of the
back.
Art facility.
West Side.
Major airport transformation.
You're saying to yourself, we're in Seattle. Why are we talking about Cleveland? Well, Charles Fitzgerald, who has been in the software industry in Seattle for 20 years, worked at Microsoft and other companies as well. He's a consultant, works with local startups and angel investors, has a blog analysis called platformeconomics.com. Charles, you thought there was some sort of connection between Cleveland and Seattle. You write the article. Cleveland was the first article. Let me get this one, Charles, because this is the one that caused the problems. Don't become the next Cleveland.
Yep. So I've been knocking around the Seattle tech scene for a couple decades and have been thinking a lot about Seattle's next act. Seattle's last act was fabulous. Over the last 25, 30 years, city's become incredibly prosperous. We've grown a lot.
Yeah.
And the software industry is getting kind of mature. The question is, what happens next? We're not punching above our weight the way we did in the AI space. We're not punching above our weight the way we did in software. And I think you can make a pretty compelling argument that both Amazon and Microsoft have hit peak employee. And as they become more capital intensive and lean into AI, they're just not going to have as many people. We're seeing other local companies lay people off. We're seeing a lot of the engineering centers that came up here to hire talent are shrinking. So the question is, what comes next for the city? And
you chose, Charles, you chose Cleveland because you thought, well, there was a prosperous place in the 30s and 40s.
Seattle today looks a lot like Cleveland 1950. Here's a city that's seen decades of population growth. It's very, very wealthy relative to the rest of the country. It's got some of the big tech companies of the day, the big industrial companies. And Cleveland fell very far, very fast. So on one hand, you had external change. Things changed. The Rust Belt started to rust. And there's the question of how did they go and manage that? And so Cleveland went from the fifth or seventh largest city to 50-something.
56,
They lost over 60% of their population. Incomes plummeted from well above average to less than half of the average in the country and even less compared to Seattle today.
So, again, Charles Dickens, tell me, spirits, this is not the things to come in the future.
Yes. So it is,
could we become Cleveland?
It is a cautionary tale. And Seattle's always been a super lucky city, right? The next big economic engine has just kind of come along. So, you know, I like to joke the Alaska Gold Rush was literally a gold rush. But after that, you had Bill Number One, who made the city synonymous with aerospace. You had the story of why we have a thriving container port is a fascinating story. There was this very narrow window where the cranes, you had to keep upgrading the cranes to take advantage of the bigger ships. And a lot of cities didn't make it. Some of the biggest ports in the world, London, San Francisco, New York, Portland, all didn't make it to the container world, but Seattle made it. And the thing that really helped the city was the Alaska earthquake of 1964. Hmm. And the government wanted to send a lot of relief supplies up there, and it came at the right time. So Seattle got onto that cycle of upgrading its cranes, and now we have a thriving port.
So a little bit of providence, luck, whatever it is.
Not a lot, but more luck, right? I mean, Bill Number Two grew up here, made the city synonymous with software. And then you had this guy named Jeff Bezos who decided, you know, hey, Seattle is where I want to be, gets mm-hmm. in his Chevy Blazer, drives across the country, pioneers both e-commerce and cloud computing here in Seattle, and creates, you know, 1.5 million jobs around the world along the way.
So after the article comes out, Charles, don't become the next Cleveland. How long did it take to hear from somebody from Cleveland?
Well, I woke up the next morning and the mayor of Cleveland had written a piece and he said, yeah, we've had our trouble, but, you know, we're getting after it now. And, you know, it's just kind of crazy that the mayor of Cleveland is more responsive to the Seattle tech community than, you know, anybody at the city of Seattle or the state of Washington.
He called, and actually when you were talking with Tom Bishop from GeekWire, and then the mayor, Mayor Justin Bibby, said,
frankly, I envy problems around growth. Those are the problems I want to have in Cleveland, and I'm trying to create the baseline so we can have those problems.
So right now, Cleveland and Ohio specifically, they're doing tax cuts, and Cleveland is doing an incentive for businesses. If you come in and you invest in Cleveland, they'll give you a break. They're just doing everything they can to attract. They have 36,000 job openings right now in Cleveland.
They are hustling for business. I mean, the mayor of Cleveland was pitching me on why Cleveland's a great place to do business, and he was pitching his local companies. Hard to imagine the mayor of Seattle doing that.
In fact, he pitched you so hard. When do you plan on flying to Cleveland?
We are putting together a delegation to go visit Cleveland and see what we can learn from them.
So isn't that odd? You've been in this business and lived here for all of these years, and you're going to Cleveland to figure out what Seattle can do.
Yeah, Seattle's pretty much fat, dumb, and happy. People take it for granted that the prosperity we've got today is going to stick around, and you really can't take that kind of prosperity for granted. And Cleveland, 75 years later, they're still digging out, right? The population has been dropping, dropping, dropping. Incomes are incredibly low. You know, Cleveland is a cautionary tale for what Seattle should become. And we need to figure out what's our next act.
You are somebody that knows the inside and the outside of the economics of software, the hiring, the dynamic ability to grow and invest. If you had a chance to sit down with the mayor, have you had a chance to talk to Katie Wilson or any of her people?
I have not heard from the mayor, only the mayor of Cleveland.
It's going to be on your tombstone.
Maybe.
So have you reached out to her people?
We did ask the mayor of Cleveland to comment on the interaction with the mayor from Cleveland, but have heard nothing back.
Okay. So if you did have some time with the mayor, new Katie Wilson, our new mayor, and her people, what would you tell them if you were the guy that's down in the bottom of the Titanic and, you know, iceberg dead ahead, right? There is something on the horizon that could really damage the whole of Seattle.
The world is changing, and the city historically has been very lucky. And you could say, hey, you know, maybe we'll get lucky again, but I would be working to create that luck. And it starts with, let's make Seattle a great place to live and work. Let's make sure people want to be here. Let's make sure they're excited about putting their kids in the local schools. Let's make sure we keep the local talent, and let's make sure we attract outside talent. You know, is the next Jeff Bezos going to get in his Chevy Blazer and drive across the country to Seattle today? It's not clear that's going to happen. So we need to focus on the basics and make sure that we can create whatever luck comes along. But right now, there seems to be a lot happening at both Olympia and the city level that says, hey, we're not really interested in – the backbone industry of the city today. And, you know, I look at the Amazon stuff. So, you know, the city or at least parts of the city government decided they really didn't like Amazon. So Amazon reacted, not surprisingly. They probably have reduced their employee headcount in Seattle by 20%.
Yeah.
They've given up 1 million square feet of real estate.
They moved out of the Dexter Triangle yesterday, yesterday.
They just announced they're going to double the amount of office space in Bellevue. And Seattle has been great for Bellevue. But if you look at downtown, downtown has record vacancies. So what is the plan from the mayor and the city council and everybody else to get downtown going again? I haven't heard anything.
Why do you think that is, that there seems to be this sort of strange – it's either benign neglect or kind of a low-frequency resentment towards business?
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, if you look – the Seattle has done incredibly well. City government, state government has also reaped an immense windfall from the prosperity of the software age. So cities grown a bunch, states grown a bunch. If you look at their budgets, spending has grown over three times the rate of population growth. And that's inflation adjusted. If you look at it in absolute dollars, it's a lot more. So you've had the government spending growing much faster than the economy or the population, essentially the tax base. And that's been going on for 25 years. And I think at some point you got to ask how long that can keep going on. And boy, if the population starts to dip down or even goes negative, the doom loop that results, and we're already seeing this for things like Seattle Public Schools, where enrollment's down 20%, which means your budget's down 20%. And you got to make some hard decisions about how are you going to consolidate space and what are you going to focus on. And, you know, like of all the things that are going on in the city, the thing that just drives me the most crazy is nobody even seems to care about the situation in the schools. Majority fourth graders, eighth graders are not proficient in reading or writing or reading or math.
Cleveland still struggles with that. But you're right. As a family, if the families care, the first thing they look for when it comes to where they're going to live is what are the schools like, right? Yeah. And if the school isn't there, when we had our kids, we were living in Queen Anne on Warren Avenue. We looked around. We said, you know, maybe the grade school, okay, but where the high school, we didn't want to send them to private school. So we got a postcard that says, congratulations on the birth of your children. Now you need to move to Sammamish. So we did. And the reason people lived in Sammamish because the schools were so good, because Microsoft was so much part of that community that everybody that worked at Microsoft is like, we want to have great schools.
Absolutely.
I remember a couple of times voting on different taxes or something. And somebody said, the reason we're going to increase the property tax is so that we can provide for the schools, because the schools are the heart of our community. If the schools begin to go south, then everybody goes north, east, or west in some other direction, and then you lose, you know, commerce, and the property values begin to drop as people move out, and there's more houses on the market, so the prices sell for less. And as you say, it's the doom loop.
We live in an advanced civilization. If we're raising kids who can't read, can't do math, they're at an immense disadvantage, and they're certainly not going to help drive our economy going forward.
Have you seen the changes that are happening in San Francisco?
Yes.
Do you think that it seemed like both the elected officials, the new mayor now in there, and the people of San Francisco said, we've had enough. That's it.
Absolutely.
We're done. And they said, okay. And all the propositions, all of the changes were, I mean, just 180 degrees from the direction the city was going. It made a sharp turn.
Yep.
Hard. I mean, not so hard to the right that you're like, you think you're living in, you know, Tennessee somewhere, but they're like, we're done with this. We tried it. We're moving on. And now they're moving in this direction. You can't be on the street. You can't do drugs. We'll put you either in jail, or we're going to put you in the hospital, and you're going to go to the hospital. You're going to stay in the hospital. You're going to get better off of this stuff. No more stealing. They're increasing the number of cops. Do you think at some point Seattle, bang, hits that wall and the voters say, we've had enough, and now let's switch?
I mean, the voters did a little over 4 years ago, and then we seem to have flipped back to—
Why do you think that is?
I think we got wrapped up in national politics, where people wanted to vote against Trump, and the best way they could do that was the, you know, most progressive local candidates. But, you know, the things that local government needs to focus on are much more basic, right? We don't need all the ideologues. We need public safety. We need— you know, let's figure out the housing problem. Let's figure out how to make the schools better, right? These are not things where you get to do big ideological gestures. It's hardcore blocking, tackling, you know, just grunt work.
Right. Fill the potholes.
It's not glamorous.
No. And it's not exciting in a way, because you're not dealing with the soul of the individual. You're dealing with their front yep. struts to make sure it doesn't break off.
Yep.
I want to continue our conversation with you, Charles Fitzgerald, because I think that your insight not only to what's happening in the tech world, I want to find out from you, are you hearing from people that are trying to make the decision, do we come to Seattle and set up in Seattle? Do we come in and poach people out of Seattle? I saw an article you did just a little while ago of some local startups that are moving out of Seattle. So what is the future for business in Seattle? And then any other advice you have for the mayor? Do you know why I endorsed her?
Because?
I wanted to try socialism without murdering 100 million people.
All right. Do it at small scale. Document the cautionary tale.
Right. But you're not talking about doing it at small scale, murdering people.
No.
Oh,
The socialism.
Socialism. Hopefully. No, I said go all in. I said, just try it. Let's stop this baby, toes thing. Oh. Go in, do it, tax the rich, redistribute wealth, and then, we'll get the warm embrace that we're supposed to get from the East Coast as well when it comes to communism and socialism. Yeah. So stick with us, Charles. Thank you, Joe. Well said, well read. Don't forget about Bucky's Auto Service Center. Been around for 50 years, right, Andrew? Will you verify that? I don't want Aaron fact-checking me. 16 locations, by the way, Aaron.
Is that right?
Yeah, go. They're known, as the Wolverines, Bucky Wolverines.
Is that so?
That's right. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. I am so honored to have you, Charles, because I've been a fan after reading the articles that you'd written for GeekWire, and I love the fact when you wrote this one piece, we asked Charles to stay with us, Charles Fitzgerald, when you wrote, "Don't become the next Cleveland," within, would you say 48 hours, the mayor of Cleveland called you?
He responded in 24, and we were on the phone in 48.
And you're going to be flying to Cleveland soon.
He has invited us to come see what we can learn from Cleveland.
Right, because you saw Cleveland as what was the past of Cleveland? What did Cleveland do to try to repair itself? A lot of those Midwest cities along the Rust Belt, whether it's Cleveland or Pittsburgh, you can start to see some of the early signs. That's a great thing.
I picked Cleveland in particular because when the Rust Belt started to rust, there are a couple different cities that were all part of that.
So
you had Pittsburgh, you had Detroit, you had Cleveland. Pittsburgh was the model for what the post-industrial playbook looks like. They really leaned into healthcare. They leaned into their university. And more importantly, everybody in town rallied around.
Yeah.
So you had the politicians, you had the business community, they worked together. That's actually a playbook that Cleveland belatedly adopted. In the case of Detroit, they were kind of just had their heads in the sand and assumed the auto business would always be there. Cleveland was interesting because the politicians got super adversarial with local industry. And when companies were starting to draw up lists of which plants were they going to close, it was very easy to say, the Cleveland one's kind of a hassle. Let's get rid of that.
I've said that the golden goose, which needs to lay the eggs but needs to be treated well, has wings, which it seems like a lot of local politicians don't realize that. So
hopefully they're learning as
because are they starting to see the numbers? We hear about this person left and this person left and these are people leaving, these are businesses leaving. It's in a microcosm, it's Amazon hops on 520, goes across and takes 20,000 people with them. But do the politicians really know that it's happening?
Who knows what they really know, but it's getting harder and harder to miss with downtown Seattle has record vacancies. Amazon is emphatically moving people out. And, Boeing's been doing a slow motion migration out of the state for 15, 20 years. They have a lot more plant and infrastructure, so it's harder to do. But they're almost 2/3 of their employees are now outside of the state of Washington, and they just announced they're going to ship some more out to South Carolina. So it can be done. It won't happen overnight, but capital will go to where it's wanted. And it doesn't seem to be wanted in Seattle. And depending on what happens in Olympia, the whole state may become a less attractive place to be.
Which leads us to?
Ball is caught. It's the running back. It's Henderson. He is tackled in bounds. 3-2-1. The Seahawks. They're bringing it home again for the second time In less than 12 years, the Seahawks win Super Bowl 60.
Big smile on the face of Charles Fitzgerald, born and raised here in the Northwest, living in Bellevue all your life and then in Seattle. So your next piece is
Don't be the Cleveland Browns. So I think the most interesting lens on everything that's going on in Olympia is what happens to the Seahawks. And if you look back at the Paul Allen tenure, so over 20 years, you had 4 Super Bowl appearances. You had a guy who had the bankroll to fund the team with what it needed. He was very patient. He didn't get involved in personnel decisions. And obviously, Paul's wealth came from the Software Act for Seattle. Mm-hmm. And now the team is for sale. And the question is, who's going to buy that team? Yeah. You know, Gates has said he's out. Ballmer's out. You know, I don't think we can trust Howard Schultz with a professional sports franchise in the Seattle area.
Not right now.
It seems unlikely that Jeff Bezos is going to come back and ride to the rescue. So who's it going to be? And I see the speculation that local musicians are going to buy into the team. But, you know, we're talking $6-8 billion, right? I mean, we're going to need a big boy billionaire for this. So we're probably looking at out-of-state money. And is anybody going to want to come to Seattle? You know, you're sitting in a place where every estate lawyer is telling people who are even moderately wealthy they need to get out of the state. So does a billionaire want to move back into the Seattle area? And then that brings up the question of, you know, the Seattle Times ran a headline, could the Seahawks move? And so it's really interesting to see tax policy start to have implications for our local football team.
Yeah,
this is, and it's also affecting the return of the NBA.
You know what? It's such an interesting bellwether, right? What an amazing experiment. If you were to write it out in an economics book, that here is this prize, this golden apple, right? Yep. That you know that here's this team, the Super Bowl, and you know the amount of revenue it generates. And when it was purchased by Paul Allen for $194 million, and then now it's turning around all these years later, going to be on the block for $10 billion. But who wants to reach out and grab it? Because you grab hold of that thing, you could be electrified by a political culture that hates you.
And just to roll it back to the Cleveland story. So the Cleveland Browns dominated the NFL in the 1950s.
Yeah.
They have not won a title since. So not only do we not want to be Cleveland, we don't want to be the Cleveland Browns.
So do you have any idea, like Tiresias, the blind prophet, who's going to – you have any idea who would buy them? We hear something like Canes. Is it Tom something or other from Canes?
Yeah, the owner of Raising Canes. I don't know
Raising
his Canes. Name is.
No? No?
I don't know.
But that would be out-of-state money too.
It'd be great if there was a big boy local billionaire who would buy the team, do a good job managing the team, and keep them here.
I heard what's it? McKenzie? Is it
Bezos
or Bill Gates' wife?
Charles,
what was that face you just made?
I'm skeptical, but who knows?
Okay. All right. We're not going to place any bets on it. Well, you have to check back with us after you make your trip to Cleveland in the winter.
Well, you should join us on the trip to Cleveland.
You should.
You're invited.
Listen, I have done research after we read your article a couple days ago, and I do highly recommend them at GeekWire. You've done 3 of them. We start with the idea of don't become Cleveland, and then the Cleveland mayor responds in a conversation about what happens when a city's economic shifts. All of this at GeekWire, Charles Fitzgerald's work commended because it is thoughtful. It's not biting. It has a sense of a looming and deep concern for the direction of the city using past history of mistakes made. And now you get a chance to meet with that mayor who I thought was absolutely dynamic, caring, and thoughtful. He gets it. He's not grinding any axes on anybody.
Unlike Seattle, where we are a very prosperous city, he is having to play the game in difficult mode. It's just a much more uphill battle. And, you know, we should avoid getting into that situation.
Yeah. Well, here it is again. Don't forget, Cleveland is rising.
The new center of the world.
Thank you, Charles.
Thank you.
Don't forget, new center of the world.
The number one metro area.
Tennessee is rocking.
A great place to start a family.
A low cost of living and rich cultural needs.
So, yeah, this is Metropolis.
the birthplace of Superman.
There goes the birthplace of Superman. See y'all in Cleveland, everybody. I guess they're celebrating there in Olympia. The all the hard work is winding down. You know, going to get that millionaire's tax, which is not a millionaire's tax, but doesn't matter. So, what time did this? Did they have this little meeting?
It just says Wednesday night, so I don't know.
Oh, it was Wednesday. Okay,
it was last night.
Yeah, you don't know when you're going to have to talk. Anyway. Maybe he didn't know he was going to have to chat at all. They'd open the microphone up for him.
You want to play you a little bit of this?
Yeah, this is a representative, Fitzgibbons, right? Yeah. By the way, you can thank him for your, every time you put gas in your car, he was really proud of the Climate Commitment Act, right? That's where they take the money from you and then they reduce the Earth's temperature because as the representative says, you know, climate crisis is an existential threat to all of us. So Joe is big on that, big on bringing down the Earth's temperature by charging like 55 cents extra per gallon. I don't know how we're doing on that right now, the Earth's temperature. But so, yeah, here he is. Do you have him?
I got him.
He's made news because he seems to be kind of rambling.
Representative Fitzgibbon. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I really want to thank you for your work on this budget. And I also want to say I want to thank the members of the minority party for their amendments on this budget, which, you know, while they were mostly not accepted, I think reflect something important about our state, which is that members of the legislature, whether in the majority or minority party, hear from their constituents what needs are that they feel need to be met by their state government. You know, and most of those amendments were amendments to invest more in the people of our state. And while we're not in a place right now where we can say yes to every investment in the people of our state, I think it really matters that we're hearing from members of both caucuses, both Democrats and Republicans, about what the people that they represent need and the desire to see us invest more, whether that's in education, in workforce development, in higher education, in natural resources, in childcare, in healthcare. And so I really take that to heart, the fact that we have members of both parties that hear from the people they represent and bring those voices to this process to say, what can we do more to support the people?
Stop for a second. He's apologized for being slightly inebriated.
Yes.
But you just get what you really should be amazed at. Not at the slurring and stuff. It's just the amount of crap words that can come out of somebody's mouth. The fact that we're investing in the other side. Just turn it on, just a machine. Just keep talking. Just keep making it sound like you reach across the aisle. And, you know, as you're reaching across, you accidentally knocked over a couple of just like, just listen. I'll take out the stupid sound effects. Just let them just keep going.
Who sent us here?
Yeah, here we go.
You know, I think that we're in a particularly hard time right now, for many reasons, but more than anything because of the expenses that we have been sent our way from Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there
we go. Those are tough things
that
we are grappling with.
Yeah. It's,
but
yeah,
we also have, I think, through this budget shown that in spite of those incredible challenges, in spite of those incredible expenses that Washington state taxpayers are now being asked to bear, we have still managed to put forward a budget that prioritizes the people of our state.
Yeah.
in K-12 education,
education,
in higher education,
healthcare,
in the social safety net. And well, you know, I don't know that there's any member here who can't think of a lot of things that we would like to see funded that aren't funded today. I am grateful to all the members of this committee and all the members of the House for putting forward their ideas.
Oh, stop. It went on for how long?
That was about five and a half minutes.
So he has officially apologized.
He's apologized, and he said he looks forward to finishing the session without alcohol. Literally.
I guess they're popping all those champagne bottles because they're going to get all the money from the rich people and then give it to the kids in school. Yeah. What a load. All right. Seattle and Cleveland. What do we have in common? And you're like, what? One had the future. One has the past. We're going to reverse those two. We'll tell you more about that in a second.